drama and literature, poetry and commentary, readings and interviews, old radio, science fiction, and new consciousness programs. And here is your host,
faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's
Roy of Hollywood.
Good morning, welcome. Good morning, good evening, and good day. Welcome to Something's Happening. We'll be here till 6 a.m. with Dynamite Radio for Night People. And our first hour and a half or so is going to be part two of a series called KPFK Ungagged, in which, we have to try to catch up with information which you have been denied over the last several years because of something called a gag rule, which doesn't exist anymore. And we want to correct some misinformation, disinformation, lack of information, which has been going on for some years. And I'm very amazed at the response that I got with my interview with Dave Adelson last Thursday night. I've never had so much response from any program I've ever broadcast over the last 25 years. And we want to spend some time on open phones, but we also want to discuss big business, which happened this last weekend, major changes in Pacifica, Democratic forces, and all that. We have with us, again, Dave Adelson, who is the chair of the local advisory board, meeting next Saturday. Dave?
Hi, Roy. How you doing?
It's exciting, and thanks for staying up to talk with us again.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And we have now, for the first time, David Fertig, F-E-R-T-I-G, David Fertig, and he is our national board member from the local area, and who's new on the national board with the new reconstituted interim national board. Welcome to the program, David.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having me.
What do you do in real life?
Well, that's debatable. I play blues harp, but I have a day job as a trial attorney doing litigation on behalf of workers who've been subjected to discrimination and harassment.
And I never asked Dave Adelson, by the way, what do you do in real life?
I'm a neurobiologist. I study the neurophysiological control of the stomach at Joint Institute of UCLA and the VA. And but lately I'm doing a lot more straight physiology, just gut physiology.
And Lydia Brasson, who is a member of the local board and will be in charge of the elections. Are you there, Lydia?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Thank you for staying up to talk with us.
Thank you.
You're in charge of the elections, which are now being formulated.
Yes, that's right.
And who is going to vote, and what are they going to vote for?
Well, first of all, I'm doing this as co-chair of the Community Needs Assessment, so it's not that I'm doing it. it's debatable how the whole thing will be structured. But this is going to be for lab board members. So the local advisory board will now be elected. And how that is configured and how much of the board will be elected and so forth will be determined in this next period of time, which is why we thought it was imperative to start launching a process of dialogue with the community to see what kind of elections they want to have.
And that's part of what is going on at Loyola Law School
exactly.
This Saturday.
Exactly.
I had an emergency email from one of the passionate activists in the dissident group, and he said, wait a minute, I want to vote, but I let my subscription lapse because I was didn't want to fund KPFK under the circumstances it was existing, but now I'm back and I want to vote, but what do I do? Because I'm not a subscriber. And
right. Well, there will be many questions like that that will be surfacing, and certainly we're very, very aware that not only because of the recent campaign, but for several years there has been an erosion of the listenership and those who have been subscribing. So that's certainly one of the issues that we're dealing with. We want as many people to participate as possible. We have come up with a tentative timetable, et cetera. So all of those are things that we will be dealing with on Saturday. So I encourage him and everyone else who's interested to come on Saturday. But some of this we'll be covering, I'm sure, tonight.
By the way, Roy, by way of description of some of Lydia's background, I think it's useful. Lydia, why don't you mention what your day job is?
Okay, I'm executive director of the Humanitarian Law Project, and we're a non-governmental organization with consultative status at the United Nations. Also in that capacity, and we specialize, by the way, in armed conflict law. Also, we have observed elections throughout the world. Many members of our organization have been in the Africas. We're in South Africa for those elections, in Haiti. I have participated in election observation throughout Latin America, so that does give me some point of reference when we get involved in this. I also have participated in the observation of non-binding plebiscites.
Mm. Okay. Well, it doesn't sound like I would expect that the outgoing board members would say the damned hippies are back to take over the station. I heard a commentary this afternoon on KPFK, just a thumbnail, a couple of minutes, saying the National Board has met, the new so-called Democratic National Board, and they did not discuss the financial problems. They did not discuss, they did nothing on the bringing autonomy back to the station's financial affairs, and they did nothing about the KPFK's transmitter project, which is lying in various warehouses, I expect, waiting for our money to come back to us.
Funny so, you should mention lying. It's not true. I mean, there were several points during the agenda. I specifically gave a report from our local board and raised the issue.
It's Dave Adelson.
I raised the issue of KPFK's finances and requested a commitment that there be that operating expenses in the transmitter project be taken care of. I also raised the issue of a return of local control of finances, which were taken away. The check writing privileges were taken away in 1995. The chair of the board,
and 7 years ago,
the chair of the board clearly stated that there was an interest by the board of devolving financial control back to the stations. And David Furtig carried several motions from our local board to that effect. And I also spoke with the treasurer about the money for the transmitter project. And it's clear that there's a strong desire to do that. The question is whether it will take a week or 2 weeks to deal with the disarray in the financial documentation that was left by the prior administration. But I think Dave can talk about all of that better than I can. Dave Furtig.
Yeah, well, and this is Dave. Yeah, the treasurer.
Okay, Dave Furtig is our national, is on the national board from the KPFK listening area.
Yeah, from the local advisory board. I was elected.
Are you talking on a cell phone or a
Well, yeah, I can pick up a handset if that's better. Hold on. Can you hear me better now?
Much better.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I heard Jabari Zaki, our treasurer, state from the table during the plenary session of the national board meeting. I believe it was Saturday or Sunday, but he was talking about the finances, and he pointed out that we do have some cash, but not tons, and we have some coming in from the settlement from the defendant director's insurance company, who pointed up $400,000. But he noted, first of all, that he intends to set aside from that money enough, if we can do it, to resume the transmitter project. And he specifically also noted hopefully like $80,000 or whatever was needed, if that's available. But we've got a $200,000-plus payroll every 2 weeks for Pacifica. And that's a big nut to crack. And we have to take care of the workers first.
That's the entire network. That's all the stations. He also pointed out that Pacifica has taken over the finances of all the stations and did so some years
January
ago.
January of 1995.
Right. And so basically the National Finance Office pays the payroll of all the stations in addition to the national. So that's the complete amount of money. It should also be noted that one of the things the board did was they returned the fired and the banned. In the absence of an executive director, who had the prior interim executive director had resigned effective Friday, and in the absence of an executive director, the board acted on its authority, or its ultimate authority over matters at the network by ordering a return of the banned and the fired from WBAI. This is one of the core demands in those people in New York who were boycotting Pacifica. Basically, Pacifica has been robbing Peter to pay Paul. That, I think, is a reasonable statement. But it looks like Paul's going to be doing a lot of fundraising to pay back Peter. So it's my hope that in the signal areas where the listeners have been aware of the corporate-level takeover of the foundation and had been withholding their funds, that now they will be donating generously as they see that they're going to be informed about what's going on at their station and they're actually going to be included. So I'm very hopeful that we will, in very short order, see strong fundraising at the other stations. Now, what's going to happen at KPFK is an interesting question because it seems like the management here and certain key programmers like Mr. Cooper are interested in portraying a very distorted vision of what's going on, and it looks like it's an attempt to keep listeners from donating. My hope is that as we talk about what's going on at this radio station and what has gone on, that the experience of the listeners at large will be the experience that I'm having on the phone with many listeners who've been calling me. They turn out to be very happy that we've engaged in this struggle and extremely supportive. So I don't think anybody should give money until they've satisfied themselves that they can trust what's being said and where it's going. And I hope we'll be able to do that in short order.
What happened this weekend?
It was wild, man. It was such a wonderful demonstration of a functional board. It was such a wonderful demonstration of the kind of energy that can be manifested when hundreds of people get together with a shared vision. I mean, shared in the generalities. Indeed, there's many different interpretations and interests as to how and what everyone wants to see in Pacifica, but the idea that it was now open, that we had an agenda that we were going to go through, that there were motions prepared in advance and circulated amongst all the members for which everyone could, you know, discuss in advance and prepare and examine and consider. I mean, this is unprecedented in at least the last year and a half or so. I mean, I went to the last two live board meetings, February and November of 2001, and the dysfunctionality had nothing to do with the few hundred people there that were protesting for community involvement. The dysfunctionality had to do with the dynamics on the board. And now, with under Leslie Kagan's leadership and the cooperative spirit amongst the board, it's a whole new day. It really was quite remarkable.
One really new dynamic was, for the longest time, and I've been going to national board meetings since 1997, the community was incredibly in support of the board. We were in a union hall, a hotel workers union, in New York City, the first time we've been in a union hall holding our meetings. And it's been hotel banquet rooms for as long as I can recall. And we must have had 500, well, let's see, the sign on the wall said 588 people was the maximum. And I suspect there were more than that. And the another interesting dynamic was that the station in New York, which had been firmly in control of forces very hostile to the Free Pacifica movement, had been advertising the board meeting and calling on their people, who they were constantly exhorting to be hostile toward the Free Pacifica movement, to get down there, and that the thing was being taken over. There was a heavy racial overtone in all of the discussions about the different factions there. I don't want to go into that in any detail, but I'll just say that the vast, vast majority of people were incredibly supportive. People were hugging each other, huge rounds of applause. The security guards had to keep holding up signs so that we'd be silent because they needed to get through their agenda, and the feeling was so positive. It was being webcast. It ended up being aired on WBAI, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful meeting.
Well, I think it's great that the National Board found a way to get Amy Goodman to stop describing WBAI as a station of the banned and the fired by bringing them back.
Yeah, that was amazing.
So that she said, I would love to not have to say that.
Well, but she never has to say it anymore.
Oh, boy. So we're going to hear Amy on at 9 o'clock now as well as 6 o'clock on KPFK.
That's our hope. Now, whether or not that happens today or tomorrow or the next day, I'm a National Board member. I can't say. Dave and Lydia are local advisory board members. They have no control over programming.
But the person who does is the new executive director, and that was, you know, in the lawsuit settlements, there was this somewhat complicated formula for how motions would get passed by this interim board that consists of five former defendants, five members elected by the former defendants, five members elected by the former plaintiffs, and five members each sent by the chairs of the local boards who did as we did, which was act on the recommendation of the whole board. So there's this complicated formula, but the two decisions that really were most crucial are the selection of the executive director and then the bylaws change that happens at the end of the year, within 15 months, 14 and a half as we stand now. Those bylaws changes are going to have to do with how elections get held and what the ultimate structure of the institution is going to be. Now, most of the changes in the reconfiguration of Pacifica since the early to mid-90s has been done basically at the direction of the executive director. So, for example, when the announcement on the air is talking about local control and we're losing local control, what it means is that the manager who was put in place by the national executive director and has held complete authority over all operations at the station without functionally any redress at any level. I mean, you could go talk to the executive director, but good luck. That centralization means that presently the person who's executive director is empowered to make fast changes at the stations. Now, we expect that executive director, in fact, we're going to demand that executive director be behaving in as consultative a fashion as possible, will establish mechanisms so that listeners know about what's going to happen, staff knows about what's going to happen, and the local boards know about what's going to happen, and there'll be some processes developed for input. That said, I saw a critique by the anonymous Friends of KPFK. It's bizarre. I mean,
Are they still anonymous?
Well, they say they're friends of KPFK, but they won't say who they are.
There's some familiar misspellings in there.
Yeah, I know. And if you go to Who Is on if you look up who owns the website, you can't get any information. They're just the Friends of KPFK with some address over on Las Palmas Avenue. So it's still a mystery who the Friends of KPFK are.
I don't think it's
are.
Mark Cooper, Mark Shove, because I've given them my email address, and I'm sure if they'd had it, they'd have put it up there.
Yeah, well, in any case, the main point is that they claim that there are purges set for all the stations, and that's news to me. Now, there's going to be management reviews, I think, for the first time in as long as I can remember, despite the fact that Pacifica policies say that the local boards are supposed to be involved in an annual review at the direction of the executive director. But in any case, leaving all that aside, the point is that we got an interim executive director. It's Dan Coughlin. He's the former head of the Pacifica Network News, who got reassigned to a job that hadn't existed before. When he aired a 20 or 30 second spot a couple of years ago, talking about a boycott by affiliate stations of Pacifica, who were not playing the Pacifica Network News because they were objecting to the censorship that was going on at Pacifica. So there's somehow this wonderful symmetry. Dan's a very bright guy, and I think Dave can talk more about why the board wanted him and chose him, but I think one of his big qualifications was he's been quite clear that he's not a candidate for permanent executive director, and we've had this thing at Pacifica for the last years where
interims get appointed sort of by no process at all, and they end up as permanent, and that just goes on and on.
And I would like to add that how all of these changes also affect everything else that has been agreed upon in the settlement, and that the judge that was having oversight also added, and that has to do with the elections, which of course I'm working on, is that as I got into this process, it is absolutely self-evident that conditions right now absolutely do not exist for fair, clean, and inclusive elections. So therefore, changes clearly have to be made by all standards of participation for the listeners before we can proceed with an election. Otherwise, it would be a meaningless poll. And I refer specifically to the airing of the show on which Mark Cooper's show, on which Dave Fertig was a guest, and where Mr. Cooper said that we could have elections in 3 days. And I am here to say, as an experienced election observer, and we always go into countries, for example, and issue a pre-electoral report based on what conditions exist that are conducive to fair and free elections, and they absolutely do not exist. And I can certainly go on, and on Saturday I will list all of the reasons I think this needs to be a report. So we are looking forward to changes that absolutely must take place in order for listeners to fully participate in what we think would be inclusive participation in an electoral process.
There's another point, too, which is, you know, there's a recognition that in this country, elections, and in a lot of the Western democracies, elections are sort of just a giving the appearance of a popular mandate for what is essentially oligarchy. And so if we're really talking about a different kind of institution, a fundamentally different kind of institution, and, you know, who knows whether or not we can actually all, as a group, and I'm talking to those of you who are listening right now, not to Dave and to Lydia and to Roy, but each one of us can somehow participate effectively in creating a different kind of institutions than the ones that dominate all the channels of broad communication in the culture. We may not be up to it, but if depending on your willingness to be involved and to try and support something that leads to different social relations within the institution, there's a lot of hope and there's a lot of power there, because if you can instantiate different social roles inside the institution, that sort of informs the discussion of everybody who lives in the institution, who's working in the institution. You can have whatever rhetoric you want, but it's really what informs your rhetoric. Is it the way you live when you come into work? What is your experience there at the job, and what is your relationship to the other people who are affected by your work? And so that's really the deeper question that's at issue. And it's a great thing that it's guaranteed via the lawsuits that this will happen. So we know that, you know, it's not a question of anybody slinging bull or just kind of putting things off to keep people at arm's length. This is going to happen. And it's going to be done methodically, and I hope that everybody who's listening right now will avail themselves of one of the opportunities that's going to be coming up this year to attend these meetings and talk about and think about how it might be done differently in a way that works, because the history of Pacifica is purge and counter-purge and people getting their, you know, going away mad, and we can't really handle that much more.
On the other hand, there has to be a certain amount of changes that we're looking forward to. And again, right now I'm looking at this specifically in relation to the elections, that unless some fundamental changes take place expeditiously, there's no way that we can have these elections in a timely manner by the end of the year.
This is Dave Ferdinand. Leadership comes from the top down. I'm not a big fan of leadership. I think we all should be our own leaders. Looking for leaders is a fool's errand, but nonetheless, in an organization that is inherently hierarchical, such as Pacifica is necessarily, at least to comply with the legal framework that we're operating under, somebody such as Dan Coughlin is really only in for a couple of months, so we can engage in a real process, not one of these truncated, ill-announced sort of things that was already on the air. But until then, we need someone who can sort of instill a kind of honesty and frankly, soldier mentality in a way. And by that, I mean an activist, a committed, Pacific is a movement. It's as much or more than it's a corporation. When we were back east talking with some of the lawyers a year ago trying to develop lines for human communication across the divide in these lawsuits, the law firm of one of the partners of the national board that had hired and maintained a lot of the management around the stations, including at KPFK for many years, this law firm, Epstein, Becker, and Green, had a partner with board member Ken Ford and John Murdoch and Bessie Walsh, I think, was in the room at the time, the executive director. And one of them, I think it was the senior partner, we paid them more than $600,000, apparently, but anyway, leaned over and said something like, this network's worth $500 million, and you guys are only making $10 million a year out of it. That's not good business. Well, that was one mentality. I think the other end of the spectrum is, or another mentality, is that this is a movement. And I think that's how it was initially created to operate. And so the kind of soldier or, activist mentality that Dan Coffin brings, after also being a professional or, journalist and manager at Pacifica and working in the D.C. office for more than a year, I mean, it's a whole new thing. And I think that the kind of honesty that he demonstrated in essentially sacrificing his job for telling the truth, putting that first, is a kind of mentality that we're hoping will seep down through the ranks, so that people who in the studios now are whispering to us that they appreciate what we're doing. And I had that happen to me when we were the first people into WBAI after the vote. Someone in the studio actually whispered to us their support of what we were doing. And the same thing at KPFK, and hopefully that will spread, and that will be, I think, a very positive influence on the whole network.
Right. I mean, I think what we're waiting for is for the winds of change to blow west. It's been, up to this point, more fully realized on the East Coast. So as David said, as those stations, WBAI and so forth, are going to be in a much better position to be fundraising. But I think that our listeners here in Los Angeles probably won't believe it until we start seeing some of the things that we really want to see in terms of reflecting what our community is, the vibrancy of the movement here that has been quite absent in many levels, including in the programming, in some of the programming, with the exception of this being one of those shows. But
hey, Roy, and speaking of that, I imagine that we've already said a bunch of things that some of your listeners are objecting to already or want to say something about, so I hope at some point, it's not just us holding forth because it's.
I'd
really
like to do that right now, as a matter of
fact. Well, I don't know if Lydia was finished. I'm a notorious interrupter.
Oh, yes. I'm just stuck on my hope of the winds blowing west. That was my final thought.
All right. Well, let's get the winds blowing in from the listenership. And if you want to talk with Dave Adelson, chairman of the local board, Lydia Brasson, who is on the local board and will be helping to form up the election process, and David Fertig, who is our national board member from the KPFK listening area. You can call. It is, what is the date? January 15th. The early possible hours of the 15th.
Right.
Yes.
Before we get into that, there's one person I really want to thank from the L.A. area, and that is Tom Irwin. He's somebody who's in the background a lot, but he's done an awful lot. There are so many people, I mean, in the movement around here, Farah Davari, Mallorys, and many others that I could, John Martinez, any number of people. And as soon as I start saying some, of course, I'm leaving some out, so that's a terrible way to do. But I really want to give special thanks to Tom, who's been a source of enormous support in a lot of different efforts, and never one to give the support but be demanding of either specific recognition or specific control. And he's a veteran of the free speech movement in Berkeley in the 60s, and I just wanted to say thanks to him, and of course mention also Lynn Geary, who was the one who created the website in 1996 that I found after I'd been on the local board for about 6 months, that had all the documentation about what was going on, without which, and who was just extraordinarily vilified and still is to this day by station management and the administration. She's taken a lot on, and she's been incredible, and definitely without which a person without which none of this would have happened.
Okay, well, I agree, and there are scores and scores of unknown people, unknown, unrecognized, who have put in backbreaking work of various types, and behind the scenes organization and terribly boring meetings and frustration.
Sharon Palmer, Eileen Goodman, Vince Ivory, Fernando Velasquez. It's just too long away.
Yeah, it's too long. It's just a frustration of fighting against insurmountable odds in a hopeless cause for years and years and years. And
look, when you can get 1,200 people out in a few days without having access to the airwaves, these are some devoted people.
Okay, well, let's listen to some of our devoted listeners now. This is
Tracy, we haven't forgotten you either.
Let me see. How can I answer this?
Lloyd Karch, Tom Camarella.
This is a conference. Come on. Okay, I hope I don't hang up on two of you right now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to talk about the Pacifica mission statement in relation to what's been going on for the last 7 years.
I'm going to have to call Lydia and David back, which I will do in a moment. Go ahead.
Okay. Part D of the mission statement has language which goes to promote the study of, to disseminate, to gather and disseminate information on the causes of conflict between any and all such groups. And then E is to access sources of news not commonly brought together in the same medium, and to employ such varied sources in the public presentation of accurate, objective, comprehensive news on all matters vitally affecting the community. Now, when you apply this to Pacifica itself and the gag rule that's been in effect for the last 7 years, what has happened is that the management of KPFK and the people that are primarily responsible for giving information about Pacifica to the listeners, people like Mark Cooper, Mark Shubb, have abrogated their responsibility to the Pacifica mission statement for the last 7 years. Now, Shubb was only on board since 95, but Cooper was here for a long time. He knew the whole thing developing. And
oh, Lloyd, I don't think you're right. I seem to remember that Cooper came on after, with Radio Nation, after a lot of the changes had been made. He had been there previously, but I don't think that's correct.
Well, they never have opened the phones to live unscreened listener call-ins, so that, you know, which is the only thing that ever keeps the honest people honest, as I like to say. And they've been screening calls since 95. There was no chance for the listeners to raise issues on air with other listeners because they controlled and manipulated the airtime in abrogation of the Pacifica mission statement. And I think that's been a tragedy for Pacifica. It's cost the network hundreds of thousands of dollars. It forced the lawsuits. It led to the 15,000 people on the streets in Berkeley in 99. And you know, I said for years that in this situation, if what we do is replace one faction with another faction, which is the way Pacifica has always done its thing, that we're risking a possible meltdown of the whole structure. And that's why in the PAC proposed bylaws that we wanted a listener-elected board where all listeners get to vote for the people they feel most comfortable with representing their interests in presenting media of a vital nature to the community that listens, that takes responsibility for providing itself with its own information, which is what Pacifica does. And hopefully that instead of fighting this process, or trying to control this process by using the airtime as the bully pulpit, the way Cooper did the other day with when Dave was on the show, that people will get some humility and start to say, okay, yeah, this has not been good the last 7 years, and let's make it work, and let's have an election process which is not only fair, but where people can finally understand what has happened over the last 7 years. And I would like to say one more thing. You mentioned Vince Ivory, but it was like somewhere around 9 or 10 years ago, Vince called me up and said, you know, can I come down and take a walk on the beach with you? We walked for about 3 hours. He laid out exactly what he felt and knew what was going on in Pacifica. I didn't believe it, and I'm sure right now most of the listeners don't believe what's going on. They don't have the information. I started going to meetings. I started going to national board meetings. I saw what he said was true. There was a corporate takeover going on, and we started going since 94. We've gone to almost every local advisory board meeting we could, as many of the national advisory board meetings as we could reach to, and most of them have been held sequestered off in Houston and sometimes even in Galveston. They were fairly, you know, fundamentally closed off from most of the activist community, which was in New York or Frisco or L.A., And this is the kind of thing that's been going on for the last 7 years, and it's really nice to see things turned around, and we're really thankful for your lawsuit and that it did generate a settlement, which looks that it might be promising. But now there's the responsibility of the listeners to figure out what's really been going on, not take anyone's word for it. Go to the websites. The website here in L.A. has been www.pacfolio.org. They have links to, they're on that site are links to all the other sites, including Lynn Gary's site, the Station Advisory Board site, which now has the three models for proposed elections up. We encourage people to read those. The PAC election proposal was written over parts of a three-year period and presented to the National Board in June of 1997. Had they honored their Pacifica mission responsibilities, they would have presented that proposal to the listeners at all five stations, and we would have never come to this potential financial debacle that we're now in.
Thank you.
Roy, I'd like to clarify one thing.
I need to call Lydia and David back, and I'm having a technological nightmare here. So we'll be back in just a moment. This is KPFK Los Angeles. We have David Fertig back and Lydia and Lydia Brasson, and I'm at a technological impasse because I can't have all three of you on the line and answer phone calls,
Roy,
at the same time.
I can put Lydia on via three-way calling, so we can release one line and I can put her on the same call.
Okay, well then, Lydia,
mm-hmm.
David will call you and put you on his line.
Okay.
And just before I do, I just want to say one thing. To clarify something Lloyd just said, when people refer to a corporate takeover, the listeners should be clear that it is not that Monsanto or some particular corporation was trying to take over Pacifica. What it was a, instead of the classical battles over airtime or program slots, what have you. This was a takeover of the corporation by a particular faction who changed the bylaws to affect the way to make the National Board of Directors capable of electing itself after they had made a lot of changes to the network, dissolved certain local advisory boards, and done the rest. So that's what those terms refer to. Now, there was certainly discussion by the group that had taken over of selling one of the signals.
One or two
of the signals in Berkeley, specifically Berkeley and New York were most attractive because they have broadcast frequencies in the commercial part of the spectrum and are worth, you know, could be worth up to a couple $100 million.
And the communities were involved there, so troublesome for corporate style management practices.
But the point is, what we were really talking about is a restructuring of the corporation and a fundamental change in how decision making happened. That a rather vast centralization. So with that, I'm going to step off and get Lydia.
Okay, I'll hang up.
It's doing me, Roy.
Okay, now let me see if I can pull this off. Hello, you're on. Hello, you're on the air with David Fertig.
I'm here. Hi, hello. Thank you. I'll be brief. I go way back on KPFK to Charles Morgan days and Atheist United and all that.
You have persevered.
We need to have listener input on these shows. What we have now is talking heads, experts, authors, and it's just like KCRW, and we don't need that. We need Pacifica. We need the community involved on every, not every hour, but at least three times a day, we need to have call-in segments. Thank you very much.
Well, that's great. I really think that's a wonderful way for people to get involved. I mean, the people that call are the people that really care about what's being talked about, and a lot of the time, they'll, of course, offer insights, but two, input through the local advisory board, I think, is such a you know, an underused and, frankly, not quite atrophied, but long underutilized organ in the Pacifica, you know, body that is the key sort of interface between so many elements of community and the station and programming.
I think the most important thing about the call-in is the ability to challenge people who are promoting a version of consensus reality that you differ with. We've got the listeners of Pacifica are exceedingly smart and thoughtful people, and to say that, you know, we're going to structure the discussion and we're not going to allow people who challenge us to have unrestricted access to us is not healthy for a place that's supposed to promote the full distribution of public information on all matters vitally affecting the community.
Well, the fear of ideas was really, I think, a lot of the things driving some of the recent moves. I mean, for example, for this promo that came out saying that we like to do our, you know, fix things behind the scenes, so to speak. I mean, clearly, you know, this notion that certain things are scary to talk about is awfully anathema to anything Pacifica.
Hello, you're on the air with David Fertig, David Adelson. And is Lydia there?
Yes, here I am.
Oh, great. David, congratulations. Thanks for your techno fix.
Hi, folks. I just want to say, well, several things, actually. Mark Cooper likes to marginalize the people who he disagrees with. But, you know, long ago, Noam Chomsky, Ed Herman, Michael Parenti, Jeff Cohen, and Norman Solomon of FAIR, and a large number of other progressives, have been outside of Mark's camp and protested the Saul Landau letter, which either Mark wrote or certainly supported strongly, that divided the left and was part of the play of preventing listeners of Pacifica from hearing the truth. And of course, Cooper is still very active in this. He seems to be behind the Friends of KPFK newsletter. His name has been on some of the emails that have gone out. And the letter that they sent out tonight is just an outrageous attack and misrepresentation of what went on in New York. I listened to most of it. It was very exciting.
What was most exciting for you listening?
I think the process, for one thing, the fact that it was held in a room with over 500 people, that human beings, not behind closed doors, could hear what was going on and participate in the process. And I also found that just the demeanor of the board and the way they went about their business and what came through in terms of their concerns was very exciting. And of course, at the end, some of the listener comments, especially from people like Lynn Gary, or I'm not sure of how to pronounce her name, who was in tears about, you know, having what we've gone through for the last 7 years and fearing that we'd have to go through the same thing again in the next 7 years if we don't fix our own, you know, personal internal processes at Pacifica.
She was arguing for a truth and reconciliation process so that listeners could understand the internal dynamics. It's very convenient to argue that, oh, it's a bunch of bad guys who did this, but the reality was there was a lot of, and you mentioned the left-splitting letters, there was a lot of sympathy among people who knew about what was going on at the stations, because the way it was before was not wonderful, and there was this dynamic, you know, I wasn't in the station, Roy, you were in the station, so maybe you can speak to it, but a dynamic of people willing to see each other done wrong because of political differences or political antagonisms, or just because of, you know, the desire for airtime. And so with that, Lynn was arguing, that without letting the listeners understand the dynamics inside the institution, they'd never be in a position to defend it when this happens again, because the frontal assaults on Pacifica are the easy ones to see when Congress is threatening to defund it, for example. The difficult ones to see are those challenges that play on people's vulnerabilities, their possibly opportunism, their ignorance sometimes. That, you know, I heard for years it was almost a badge of honor when people would say, oh, well, I don't concern myself with station politics. I just come in and do my show. Well, Pacifica's air is really precious, and I think that if you cannot take it for granted. If you're going to be involved in the station, you don't want to spend all your time on Pacifica or even the bulk of it, but you have to understand what's going on, and the listeners really are the most disinterested party in the whole thing, and so they have to be able to be aware of the dynamics, and that's different than dirty laundry. It's different than, and I will tell you now that as much as I've been vilified by Mark Cooper, I'm not comfortable with his name coming up over and over and over again, because he is not the sole architect of any of this. He may have done a lot at certain times to contribute to it, but even if Mark had never existed, and as I said, this all started actually before he came back into the picture. So, you know, I don't want to ramble anymore.
Well, Mike,
let's hear another listener.
My concern with Mark Cooper is what role he is playing right now. I understand that there's a history, but right now with these carts, and with these Friends of KPFK letters, and with his treatment of Dave Fertig, Mark Cooper is playing a terrible obstructive role, and he's abusing his control of the mic, and he's abusing his relationship. One thing is that I've said over and over again to people that it's not Mark Cooper's politics that are the issue. If people start attacking Mark Cooper,
I think I really feel, I also feel uncomfortable with an individual being attacked who's not here to defend
himself.
Yeah,
I mean, if Mark calls up, we can talk about his role, but there's going to be opportunities to talk about what happened and what this.
When will there be those opportunities? You know, I called Josh Berman today and was very rudely treated, and I tried to find out when there would be some balanced discussion and maybe some drive time talk, as was in the resolution, which I guess is no longer in effect because that was only that only lasted until this weekend. And you know, there's just no interest whatsoever by the program director at KPFK to open up the airwaves to listeners to do any kind of two-way communication. So what will it take when some of the station staff, through these carts and through this Friends of KPFK broadside, you know, just misrepresenting the national board and attacking it and trying to rally the listeners. How will that be countered? How will that,
This is Dave Furtick. I mean, I spoke to Dan Coughlin about the whole dynamic and how this sort of influence that he can have and bring. There are really good people inside of the stations, and some of whom, you know, have perhaps in the eyes of many might reasonably be considered people who have done really, you know, negative things in support of negative stuff. But there are many people who have simply been misinformed, like many of the listeners, although I must say the manner in which they're being informed currently speaks a whole lot in the subtext of how it's being said.
Well,
that I'm getting a lot of emails and calls, but they're not many of them are very negative.
That's been the amazing part of it.
Yeah.
I think you shouldn't worry too much. Don't give it too much power, because I've talked to a lot of people, and when I get calls, what they say is, something's wrong in what I'm hearing. I need to hear more information, because in order to craft a statement so that they're even so that they can be defended at all, as like this argument that, well, for the first time ever, Pacifica National is dictating programming, by which they mean that Pacifica National dictated that there be drive time programming dealing with the issue of what's been happening internally, which has people from each side, and what you just talked about. So they're sort of constrained by, you know, they can't go off on total flights of fancy. And again, the listeners, even Cooper's listeners, are remarkably intelligent people by and large. They're kind-hearted by and large, and they are thoughtful. And I don't think, like, when I see these things getting, this Friends of KPFK letter that you mentioned, getting more and more extreme, yet without giving any facts, like, without making reference to any data, just making assertions, that is going to compel the least thoughtful of the listeners, and I am not so worried about KPFK's listeners, based on direct experience fielding these phone calls. People are alarmed. But the other thing is, when you repeat something over and over and over again, when the sky is falling, there becomes a little bit of desensitization that occurs. Now, maybe somebody's going to do something terrible, I don't know, to try and make the point that terrible things are going to happen. But I think that reality will out, and therefore, and it won't take forever.
Well, it's interesting. It's invigorating people. We're getting phone calls and contacts, and this is going to help in the election process because, I mean, as negative as it is, it's getting people's interest, and I'm glad that, you know, as negative as it is, at least it's getting it on the air. Now, Roy, thanks to you and the other programmers that will follow to have, you know, greater exposition of this stuff on the air, it's going to help the labs and the whole organization to re-involve the community and get these, whether they're elections or what is it, Lydia? Binding plebiscites? Is that the term?
It's actually non-binding because we can't get into those mechanisms yet. I mean, that's my whole point is that we are kind of stifled. That I do agree with the gentleman calling because I think that the proof is in the pudding. I think it would be just as dangerous for us to completely let down our guard and think that the job is complete because it is not, or that the national can do it all. Give a proxy vote to other people at this juncture. It's the most critical time. It calls on everyone's involvement at this time because at least locally nothing has changed. The environment has changed at the national level, and you know, we're very, very hopeful. But the apprehension in people that I have spoken to, of course, are still waiting for something of greater substance to happen. Also, as I said, nothing magnified that more to me than this process as we're looking at it in terms of the elections. The gentleman that called it that was concerned about not being able to get his donation and his pledge in on time, etc., there will be allowances for that, obviously. But, I mean, there are all kinds of things that were eliminated over this process where people were able to volunteer time if they didn't have money in order to qualify, where we want to have prisoners involved, all of the things that haven't existed before, the PAC folio, which would be critical at a time when we're trying to start elections, which have to start right away. But unless some changes take place, and how those changes are defined. Again, it depends on all of our participation. I think this is a time of the utmost vigilance, which is why we're also urging people to come on Saturday.
Yeah, I think this program right now is so important. I just wish it were on during drive time, and I urge people listening to talk to their friends who are awake earlier in the day to call the station and the program director and urge them to open up the airwaves.
That's a very good point. You know, everybody listening right now should be deputized. If each one, who is it that says each one's got to reach one, each one's got to teach one? We don't have the air, by and large, right now, and so if everybody listening right now decides that they're going to inform a couple of other people of what's going on and what's at stake and where they can learn more, that's extremely valuable. So I hope everyone will consider doing what they can.
Hello, caller on KPFK Los Angeles.
Yeah, I had a question about that lawsuit. I'm not exactly sure what it's about.
Well, there were four lawsuits.
Can I do the three-minute spiel? The basic thing, the thing that triggered the first lawsuit, actually what triggered the investigation in the first lawsuit was when the board removed the voting rights of staff who were on LABs. What the struggle was really about was the board's effort to get enough members on the board who would support a station sale or the kind of major changes they wanted to make, because at all times there was a lot of static for some of these changes that were going on. So they had tried in 97 to change, the national board had tried in 97 to change their bylaws to get control of their own majority. And then in 99, following a letter that the former executive director had solicited from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting asking whether it violated any of their rules to have people sitting on local boards and the national board at the same time, the board voted. So the head of CPB wrote back and he said, "Why, yes, I think it is a violation, even though Pacifica Structure predates the CPB and CPB rules were written, and Public Broadcasting Act rules were written partly on the basis of that structure. In any case, they later received a threat from the vice president in charge of radio that they would get an immediate withdrawal of funding unless they altered their bylaws. So they changed their bylaws to make it so the board was self-electing, whereas previously the local boards, which are themselves and have always been self-electing, they got rid. Prior to that, the local boards had elected at the five stations had elected 2/3 of the national board. Now, under California Corporations Code, if you have rights to elect directors, you're a member of the corporation. Pacifica is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. So if you're a member of a corporation with voting rights for directors, you can't have those rights removed without your consent. So that was really the core legal claim. Now, there were additional things. The network spent $500,000 on armed security guards and PR firms when it locked out staff at KPFA. And we were contending that spending money in that way wasn't consistent with any of the purposes in the Articles of Incorporation. So if you spend money on things that are inconsistent with the purposes in the Articles of Incorporation, you're liable as well. Now, courts grant wide latitude for boards of directors to interpret those things, but here it was pretty clear that they were spending the money to defend their power interests. Then additionally, there were on the board people who were objecting to what was going on, and they were being refused the right to look at financial documents. That's illegal. Every member of a board of directors has an absolute right to look at any corporate documents. Additionally, they were violating other features of the bylaws. Like, the bylaws said that described an executive committee. The executive committee is the one that told the executive director what to do in between board meetings and basically was in charge of oversight over running the corporation. And they weren't electing directors. They were to the executive committee. They were appointing people. So it was such that the chair was basically able to constitute that committee and control the network even when there wasn't consensus on some of the things that were going on. And there were other violations as well. For example, they were letting certain directors who were favorable to what Ed Herman called the control group on the board, they were just extending their terms on the basis of the fact that, so for example, they'd be elected for a 3-year term on the board of directors. And then that 3-year term would elapse, but a year before it elapsed, they would elect them to a 2-year term on the executive committee, for example. And on the basis of their term on the executive committee, they'd extend their term as a member. That's illegal. So there was just this, there was just thing after thing after thing that they were doing that was violating basic corporate conduct. And so ultimately, they were being sued by local boards. They were, 20 members of 4 of the 5 local boards. They were being sued by 2 different groups of their own directors. One was a cross complaint, and one was an outright suit for illegal conduct of business. And they were also being sued by a group of listeners who were given standing by the attorney general of the state of California because he found there was reason to believe that or issues of fact that needed to be resolved regarding whether or not it was actually operating in a manner consistent with its charter and whether or not it had violated a charitable trust for the state of California. So those were the 4 suits, and they were supported by tens of thousands of listeners across the country who were aware of it.
And many of those, of course, still remain unresolved. For example, the voting rights that were denied and the standing, the member rights and standing that was denied us because of the bylaws change, it's still not resolved. I mean, hopefully in the next set of bylaws, that's what we're working toward. But again, I think that it's important to remember, as promising as all of this is that it isn't a slam dunk. I, for one, was appalled that it wasn't a vote in favor of moving the offices back to Berkeley. I thought that would have been a piece of cake, and I was very, very shocked, actually, that that given the way that the voting went on other issues, that was not one of them. So as we
you should describe what you're talking about, because people don't know. The prior administration, there was a building in Berkeley built for the purposes of housing the national office. Money had been solicited to create that building. In 1999, after they'd locked out staff in Berkeley, there was such a massive popular uprising. Local elected officials, even the damn police department, was refusing to cooperate with Pacifica and said they'd never seen anything like it. By the way, the city of Berkeley ended up authorizing $10,000 to be given to the suit because they were so outraged at the amount of money that Pacifica was spending of city resources to deal with what had gone on. So they moved in the middle of the night, I think it was around 9 p.m., they brought a moving van up to the national office and moved all the documents to Washington, D.C. And then about a year and a half later, they took the finance office out of Los Angeles, where it was housed upstairs at KPFK, and moved it to Washington, D.C. So now all the documents and all the all of the financial documents and all the national office and all the rest of it is now co-housed with and renting space in Washington, D.C.
For a California corporation, which Pacifica is. So prolonging the new staff that they have that is Washington-based now just makes us so vulnerable because as they see the writing on the wall, they'll start quitting and leaving us high and dry. I mean, there was absolutely no rationale for not having that vote, which, again, it just the only thing that I urge is that all listeners continue to participate and not get too lost in the euphoria, as happy as all of us are and as much as we do have to be happy about. But we have a long way to go. This really is just the beginning, and that's not even taking into account all of the things structurally from the bottom up. For example, with these elections, what we're really calling for on Saturday is for people to participate in how the elections will be conducted. The lab, and certainly we don't plan to say this is how it's going to go, even though the court has said let's start out with a boilerplate of the KPFA elections, but we want to go far beyond that. And everything that we haven't had as voters, for example, in federal, local, and state elections, we have the opportunity to have input. That's what this period of consultation we hope will be. In other words, we want to start changing the culture of our democratic being in this signal area at the very least, and certainly Pacifica-wide.
Well, it's very ironic. This is Dave Furtick again. It's very ironic. One of the constant refrains I've heard from people who have opposed me in the arguments, such as Mark Cooper and others, about these controversies, I said, well, you're not elected, you know, and you're just doing a power grab. Well, being on the local advisory board was the most powerless position there ever was, because the station would never meet with us. But, you know, then when the settlement occurred, the action really creates a dissemination of power, not an accumulation of it. And so I think that the notion that there's going to be an election is really far more dramatic than I think a lot of people will realize, particularly when they get those ballots in the mail, and they're going to say, well, what was this about? And they'll wish that they had been involved. So I hope people do come down Saturday and join us. I want to say something about this move, though, because I voted against it, and I'm taking a lot of heat for it, and that's fine. Why did I vote against the move? What I voted against was that there be a commitment to move as soon as feasible. What is feasible, that's a debatable thing. And frankly, the vote was 5-5, and I knew going in that there were not enough votes to pass this thing. So I was a little surprised. I knew that there were some people on our board, including the treasurer and another member from Washington, D.C. They're both the treasurers from D.C. as well. But the treasurer, who had spent many, many hours doing a lot of hard work working with the staff and in the records of D.C., and he was adamant, and I didn't feel that it would be respectful to say, no, you know, I recognize that it was not going to happen next week, but I thought, and I've said from the outset, that I thought that we need to do a plan on the move. We need to do it quickly. We need to do it absolutely, but we need to do it carefully. And, you know, it's really kind of ironic, given that, in fact, the headquarters was in Los Angeles for quite a long time. But I think it definitely should come back to Berkeley. That's its spiritual home. And I think that the members in New York and D.C. will come to recognize that if they don't already. And I'm sure that it's going to happen. It's not a matter of whether, but when.
And some of these discussions will be continued on Saturday. I have a great deal more to say to you, David, on that issue. So
we will have a spirited
meeting. There's no doubt about that.
We always do.
And we welcome that. We do welcome the participation of everyone that attends. We don't always get around to everybody, but we try to make ourselves as available as possible, even after meetings adjourn.
Well, it's funny. People characterize some as dissidents. I should darn well hope everybody that listens to Pacifica is a dissident.
Did we answer the gentleman's question adequately? Is he
yes,
still on the line?
I think I got quite a good answer there.
Another one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Roy.
Thank you.
Hello, you're on the air with our board members.
Yes, I was wondering, it seems like you said Mark Shubb had been there since 1995. Isn't that sort of a long term for a general manager at a station? And it seems, at least with what I've heard on the air, he seems to be rather unhappy with the new direction of the board. Has he made any sounds that he might be resigning?
I haven't heard any such sounds, Roy, it was my understanding that's the longest tenure of any general manager at KPFK. Is that accurate?
I'm not positive about
that. Or the second longest, but you know, the whole time, throughout the duration of his tenure, he definitely had absolute authority. Now, he delegated that authority at times. He was even talking about how he had only removed one group of people from the air, which was some Ron Wilkins, another African-American, and I don't know whether Ruben Lizardo is Mexican-American or exactly what his ethnic background was, but anyhow, there were a number of black and brown programmers who were discussing the purge of black and brown programmers from KPFK and Pacifica in 1996. And Mark came down and cut that program off in mid-program. And as I understand it, everyone who was in the studio at the time was banned. And the next day, a memorandum went up saying that people could not only not discuss internal station policy on the air, but they couldn't announce events at which it would be discussed, or they would be permanently removed from the station. But he said at the national board meeting, when questioned about that he'd only removed that group of people and nobody else, despite the fact that over 60 programs were removed within a couple of years of the change. Some of that did happen before he was there. But anyhow, the point is he delegated authority, but ultimately he had complete authority, and he didn't have any oversight by any local entities. All this talk about local control, what they're saying is his control.